Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. For anyone traveling to Lower Manhattan for any reason, just letting you know there's been a crane accident near the World Trade Center site at Vesey and West Streets, where there's a Goldman Sachs building under construction. Apparently, the crane dropped a load of steel that it was carrying and crushed a trailer. At least one person was rescued. No word on his condition or anyone else who may have been hurt. EMS workers are on the scene, and building inspectors and engineers are also headed to the site. So that's certainly going to mess things up for travel in Lower Manhattan for a while as well. Since yesterday's show, the George Mitchell Report came out with its conclusions and recommendations about steroids in baseball. And, of course, all those names. My own 9-year-old took it pretty hard last night when he learned that Andy Pettitte was on the list. He's a big Pettitte fan. He's a pitcher himself in Little League. That's what he's interested most in the game. And always admired Pettitte for what appeared to be his good character, his humble presence, as well as his pitching. And my son was disappointed and confused and trying to figure out what to think of Pettitte now. And we couldn't sort it all out in one night. How did the Mitchell Report play in your house? What did you tell your kids? What did they tell you? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We'll also talk now about the Mitchell Report and individual rights. This is not a legal document, and these are allegations, not proof positive. The legal equivalent of indictments, not convictions, if you know what I mean. Many of the 80 or so names, they no doubt got right, but chances are there are some they got wrong. Here is Baseball Players Union President Donald Fehr speaking about this yesterday.
Many players are named. Their reputations have been adversely affected, probably forever. Even if it turns out down the road that they should not have been.
So let's talk about the big picture. Obviously, a culture of illegal drug use in the game that may or may not be a thing of the past now, but also about due process and innocence until guilt is proven for individuals. Roger Clemens, for example, is vehemently denying the stories in the Mitchell Report about him. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And what have you and your baseball fan kids been saying to each other about this? And I'm very happy to have Jim Boughton back with us, former Yankees pitcher and author of books, including the baseball classic Ball 4, where he wrote about different kinds of substance abuse back in the 1960s. He's both a strong union supporter and a big critic of steroids in the game. Hi, Jim. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Nice to be back.
And also with us is labor lawyer Robert Keel. Mr. Keel, thanks a lot for joining us.
Pleasure to talk to you.
Jim, are you feeling torn this morning as a union guy and an anti-steroids guy?
Yeah, well, I have felt all along, and I've expressed this a number of times, that the union is largely at fault for the problems that they have right now. They've been dragging their feet on the steroid issue. They have unfortunately taken a legal position, a legal approach on this, elevating the players' rights to privacy above their rights to good health and fair competition among their peers.
What would you like to see the union doing that it's not doing?
Well, it should have stood very strongly early on for very strong drug rules so that the players' reputations could be protected and you wouldn't have a situation like this. You know, there's no reason why, even if most of the players in the big leagues were on steroids, the union should have protected the minority that weren't on drugs. Why should a player have to take performance-enhancing drugs that could damage their health in order to compete for a job?
And those are the voices who we never seem to hear. I know Frank Thomas, the slugger, has been outspoken, but so many players who don't take steroids probably felt pressured, too, because in order to keep up with their peers in a competitive situation, and the peers were taking performance-enhancing drugs, they were kind of pressured toward that situation.
Probably. They saw teammates who could help them win games, and so they didn't say anything. The other thing is that baseball players, like most professional athletes, are not political guys. Their total focus is on their performance and their health. well, not their health, but certainly they need to be healthy enough to pitch to play the next game.
Yeah.
So that's where their focus is, and they're not thinking about the political issues or the long-term implications.
Robert Keel, you're a labor lawyer. Do you usually represent labor or management?
Management, mostly.
And so I guess then you...
Well, I teach sports law at Columbia, so
sports
I have
law.
Academic credentials, too.
So is this... Are you related to the legendary labor negotiator Theodore Keel?
He is my father.
How about that? Do you...
Well, the actor Howard.
Yeah, no, it's, we have an H in our name.
Did you hear Donald Fear hear that clip yesterday?
Yeah,
and what
I
do you
did,
think of the union?
I did, and you know, and I heard and I second Jim's comments. To me, the big picture here is the clarion call to the union, who has no legal obligation to bargain until the contract runs out in 3 years. I think this is a call to them to stand up for. I hope it's the majority. I think it's the majority of the players who stand for fair competition and non-steroid, and stand up for them and say, we join the community and the world at large, and we oppose continuation of this culture, and we want to change it dramatically. And it's a call and a challenge to them, and I do hope the union will stand up.
And in fairness to the union, they did agree to reopen the collective bargaining agreement in the middle once already to add a steroids testing program.
But according to the report, it's not there. The problem continues, and the agreement isn't as extensive as it could be, and it can be strengthened. And Senator Mitchell recommends that it be strengthened, and he calls on all the industry, including the union, to join in implementing his steps, and a lot of them can't be done without union support. So we do need further support from the union, and I would hope that you and the fans and everybody else encourages them to stand up and look at the big picture, which is that there's more to do.
Mike in Morristown, you're on WNYC with labor lawyer Robert Keel and former Yankee Jim Boughton. Hello.
Hello, Robert. Hello, Mr. Boughton. I do appreciate you taking my call. I was in tears yesterday with my 6-year-old and my 8-year-old. We attend the Church of Baseball 162 games a year. Our team happens to be the New York Yankees, so I am familiar with Mr. Boughton. I do appreciate his work he's done for that organization. But going back and looking at the past, the history of baseball here, which is what I tried to implore last night to my children, is that a gentleman who never hit 50 home runs in a year, being Hank Aaron, the all-time home run leader, is by far a much greater accomplishment. The man was 5'10", probably weighed about 185 pounds. Barry Bonds' godfather, Willie Mays, another great baseball player who actually took time off to go fight in the war and still hit 660 home runs. These are incredible people, great people, and what they're doing today with the steroids or the human growth hormone or whatever it is you want to call it, it's cheating. And there's a right way to do things and there's a wrong way to do things. If Mr. Mickey Mantle did not leave the mines of Oklahoma, he would have been just as strong, but he would have been just as strong of a miner instead of a guy that hit the ball 565 feet.
Hey, Mike, how did the night wind up with your 6-year-old and 8-year-old baseball fans? My 9-year-old wound up saying to me, he said, the only thing I don't like about living today is that my favorite sport is being ruined. I wish I lived when Mickey Mantle and Hank Aaron were hitting the home runs. It's eerily reminiscent to what you said, but this came out of course, my 9-year-old doesn't realize we have much bigger problems today, but that's another story. But how did you, but he was disillusioned, but he was going to go on being a baseball fan.
Yeah, and also my son too. As you said, like we both shared a very intimate bond as far as our admiration for Andy Pettit. He always seemed like a very upright human being. He seemed like he was part of the Christian Ballplayers of America. And to be defied by him by a man that I said, you know what? Because his name's Michael too. I said, Mike, you know, one day you could be this guy. And I never want to point to a screen and say, you could be this guy, and I know that guy cheated.
There you go. Mike, thank you very much for your call. Jim Boughton, you wrote Ball 4 about the Yankees in the 60s. You wrote about heavy drinking. That's a performance-diminishing drug. Did you also write about amphetamines?
Yes, I wrote about amphetamines. As a matter of fact, I quoted my teammate Don Mincher as saying that more than half the guys in the big leagues were taking amphetamines. This was in 1970. But amphetamines are not in the same category of performance-enhancing drugs.
Why not?
Well, amphetamines allowed you to play up to your ability. So they enabled you to play maybe as good as you could play if you had a hangover or stayed out too late the night before.
But is that a little bit of an excuse, Jim? Because if part of the game is being on the road constantly for 6 months, where you play practically every day for a 26-week season, and some people deal with the natural fatigue in natural ways, and other people are popping uppers, then it's not that different from steroids, is it?
No, it's not. It's to that extent, it's not that different. But I don't know, you know, whether the health effects are the same as steroids, and it also didn't really change your body size. It didn't create a superhuman individual. It just, you know, as I said, it was a performance enabler.
Do you make any distinction between the guys who use the steroids to bulk up so they could try to hit a million home runs and the guys who allegedly, like Andy Pettit, were using them to recover from injuries or just recover between starts a little more quickly so they could just be themselves without being worn down? Do you make any distinction between those two kinds of use?
Well, I think, you know, if there is a distinction, you know, it needs to be discovered. I think a lot more investigation needs to go into it. I think that's in the aftermath. What do you do now about these records that have been obviously distorted by steroids, and which ones need to be changed and which ones need to be left alone or looked at? So I think that discussion will bring that out. I think baseball has much bigger problems right now, and they go to the idea that you were talking about before, the 9-year-old kids are being disillusioned with baseball. I think the game is now at the point where they were in 1919 after Chicago Black Sox scandals. Is this legitimate? Are we watching professional wrestling here, or are we watching real athletes, normal human beings playing ball? And I think baseball now with this report, they've waited too long. They haven't done the right thing in recent years, and now they need to go way further than much further than the report is saying. And I think they need to ban performance enhancing drugs that haven't even been invented yet.
How can they do that?
How do you do that? You take blood tests, annual blood tests of all the players, and you keep them, and they're held in reserve. And if it turns out that a future performance enhancing drug comes along, players will be tested for that. If it turns out that years earlier they were using that drug, then they're going to have to pay whatever the penalty is. Otherwise, if you don't do that, if you don't ban performance-enhancing drugs yet to be named, it's in a constant race with the chemists who will be coming up with a new drug, and you'll always be 2 and 3 or 5 years behind whatever the performance-enhancing drug of the day happens to be.
Mr. Keel, as a labor lawyer, what about individual rights after the Mitchell Report? Being named in the Mitchell Report is not being convicted in a court of law. It's not a guilty verdict in an official legal sense. So we have to treat these as allegations, not convictions. Correct?
Absolutely. And Jim was quite correct. They're totally different issues. The issue to me, and Senator Mitchell made it very clear, he's focused more on the future and how to address these issues going forward. I think that's where the emphasis is. The fact that names were mentioned, which may or may not be accurate and may or may not prove out, are an unfortunate casualty of past not being as responsive as it should have been to this problem.
So what rights do individuals have if they deny the charges, like Roger Clemens is denying them?
Well, if an individual says, I didn't do it, that's the end of the debate right now. He's not being the particular players are not being charged with either crimes or violations of baseball rules by a disciplinary process. If baseball envisions it important to file grievances or to file claims, then there's a process to do it. Senator Mitchell encouraged baseball, particularly because a lot of this is historical, you know, many years ago,
let things go
by.
Most of it involves retired players, but some of it involves current players.
Yeah. And,
And I guess there is a union negotiated due process.
Absolutely. They have the industry has to decide first, do they wish to single someone out for further processing? And if they do, there's a process under the collective bargaining contract that ensures the individual gets his legal rights.
As a lawyer,
public relations.
That's right. What do you think about Roger Clemens' attorney's claim that the guy who's accusing Clemens is a trainer who I guess was caught with steroids and was under threat of jail time unless he cooperated with the investigation? And in those circumstances, he named Roger Clemens. For you as a lawyer, how credible is that?
Well, it's a factor that obviously is used in every criminal prosecution. Most criminal cases, most civil cases of this sort have people who were co-conspirators, if you will, or co-participants who snitch. And, you know, whether they're telling the truth or not is dependent on each individual situation. And it's a factor to take into account.
We'll continue in a minute with Jim Boughton and labor lawyer Robert Keel, and your calls 212-433-WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we talk about the steroids in baseball report with former Yankee Jim Boughton, author of Ball 4 and other books, and labor lawyer Robert Keel. Chuck in Wayne, you're on WNYC. Hi, Chuck.
Hello.
Go ahead, Chuck.
Good, I'm here.
What do you want to say?
I want to ask Jim what unit he finally joined in the 1960s, what Army Reserve or National Guard unit. He came into my office in Staten Island to join my Army Special Forces unit, but he didn't have the qualifications, so...
Jim Boughton tried to enlist in the Army with you?
Oh, yes.
I was in the Army. I was in the Army 6 months reserve, and my first year of Army Reserve duty, every weekend I had to go to the Exemption and Deferment Board on Staten Island and stamp papers. And my other major accomplishment was I wrote an exemption and deferment board fight song in order to improve morale in the office.
You want to sing it?
I was not rejected from the Special Forces.
All right. Michael in, is it Bristol, Vermont?
Bristol,
Vermont. Hi, Michael. Hello.
Hi.
From New York.
I was born in Manhattan, but I listened to you on the radio.
Great.
On the computer, actually.
Yeah.
My son is a sophomore in high school. He's also a pitcher, and he came home yesterday and he watched. We watched together, and you know, my feeling is that the game transcends what's going on today. It's the important thing to him. Actually, he picked up a big tip from Pettit this summer because he saw something in his motion, and he just kind of slowed his motion down, stayed a little more straight up and down. And picked up maybe 5 miles an hour on his fastball. And I think kids today are a little cynical anyway. And I think he's going to look at, Andy Pettit for his mechanics and not as a life, how he lives his life or his training methods.
Does he already not look at baseball players for how they live their lives?
No, he never has because yeah. I've never really... He's smart enough. I mean, he looks to me to see how he lives his life.
And I always tell my kids, these are athletes, not role models.
Exactly. I mean, Mickey Mantle, I mean, one of the greatest things. I mean, my son's name is Mickey, and I'm obviously a Yankee fan. I used to see you, Mr. Boughton, around Teaneck quite a bit. I don't know if you still live there, do you?
No, I live up in Massachusetts now.
Oh, okay.
All right. So, Jim, do you agree with what Michael is saying?
Well, in terms of role models, yeah, I think the issue here is not the legal one of whether these guys are guilty or innocent in court.
It's one issue.
These are public figures. They're in a public business, and they need to address that issue.
So, what do you think about the reputations? Like Clemens' lawyer, I think used the word slander yesterday, and I don't know if he used it in a legal sense to say he may file a slander suit. But he's saying, my client didn't do this, and he may now find himself, the victim of slander.
These guys are public figures. They signed on to a public business. They understood that this is exactly the kind of thing that could happen. They've seen it happen in the past before. That's why they could have done something about it. If they have any familiarity with baseball history, they understand that if they get caught on the wrong side of this steroid issue one day, they could be called on it. And that's why their union did not protect them, and that's why I blame the union on this. And the players who didn't go forward and say, look, let's do something collectively here so we don't have this kind of a situation here.
It really does raise the question of which players the union is representing. But you could understand also why they want to protect all players from what they see as undue interference, undue invasion of their bodies with blood tests. That would be a typical historic union response, right? To protect the players from what management wants to do.
Yes, and that's what they've been doing. And unfortunately, the players' rights to health and fair competition is a more important issue. But Gene Orr and Don Fear are lawyers, and so mm-hmm. they've taken a legal approach to this instead of a public relations approach.
And I should say we invited the Players Association to provide a guest for this morning, but they declined. But Mr. Keel, as a labor lawyer, what about this question of slander? I'm actually not sure whether it was Clemens' attorney or whether it was Donald Fear in that statement that he gave last night who used that word, slander.
Jim Bowden is becoming a wonderful lawyer. There are so many legal defenses to this, to a claim. Senator Mitchell has got an internal investigation and a quasi-privilege. He's got the First Amendment behind him. I mean, I'm not suggesting for a moment any of the players did or didn't do something. I'm confident that there was a basis for Senator Mitchell's comments.
Right. You figure that, you know, out of 80 named players, he got most of them right. Maybe he got a few wrong.
Well, I'm not assuming anything, but the point is that he acted in good faith and not with malice, and therefore there's not going to be a claim. There'll be a public opinion debate, and the players are free to make the debate. If, in fact, a proceeding is brought, they'll have a chance to defend themselves.
I think the key here is the
one that Jim's talked about. The future here, hopefully, will be one in which the union joins management, joins the fans, joins you, in pushing for a stronger regime that ensures that in the future this kind of situation doesn't happen, because I believe that's in the best interest of most players.
And on that point, Jim, you're calling for a one-strike-and-you're-out policy?
Yeah, one-strike-and-you're-out. More games have been unfairly, illegally impacted by drugs than ever by gambling. Why give a guy a suspension? Is somebody accidentally injected themselves with steroids? No.
You say
a conscious decision to cheat. One strike and you're out. If you did that, boy, I think most people would think, wow, they have really ended the performance-enhancing drug issue.
So Pete Rose, you bet on baseball one time, you're banned from the game for life. You're saying one positive test for performance enhancement drugs,
and you're out. What's the problem with that? I mean, if you can't get it at a grocery store, don't put it in your body.
Sandra in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. We have about 20 seconds for you.
Okay. Testosterone and human growth hormone are both produced in the human body, and they are available as part of anti-aging therapy from, last time I checked, several of New York's holistic or complementary
You think the
physicians.
Substance is being too vilified?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Why shouldn't they be available for baseball
Jim
players?
Bowden, take 20 seconds.
Well, I think you need to have more qualified people than me commenting on that. But
I could say because they ravage some people's bodies, and then they inspire kids to get into this performance enhancement race. But they're very, very dangerous for many of the players.
Right. It may be that athletes are going to have to give up, anti-aging, drugs in order to protect their reputations for their sport, and that's one of the things that you give up when you become a professional athlete.
Jim Bowden, 10 seconds. Was Mitchell fair, and is the media being fair by naming these names?
I think they have no choice. It's a First Amendment issue. That information is out there, and I don't see how they can withhold it.
Robert Keel, last word, 10 seconds.
I come back. I think the naming of the names is less significant than the identification of a problem that needs a solution. and I would encourage everyone to encourage the union to be more supportive of the
Robert Keel, labor lawyer, Jim Bouton, former Yankee, author of Ball 4 and other books. Thank you both for coming on with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.